Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts to listen to our episodes early and ad-free and get access to monthly exclusive episodes. Go to patreon.com/madnesspod. You can also hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts for ad-free episodes. We've got links in our show notes.
The opinions expressed in the following episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Minds of Madness podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
There's a moment in Shakespeare's Macbeth that echoes through the centuries. Lady Macbeth, gripped by guilt after plotting a murder, begins to unravel. She paces in the dark, rubbing her hands raw, convinced she can still see blood that isn't there. "Out, damn spot," she cries, and she can't stop scrubbing. Centuries later, this scene still resonates. Do something terrible, and you want to clean it away. Wash the stain. Pretend it never happened. That's what guilt usually looks like, an urge to erase. But the mind of a murderer doesn't always follow that script. Sometimes it's unflinching. No feelings of guilt. Sometimes, no feelings at all. Because in some minds, murder isn't a breaking point. It's a means to an end. A way to solve a problem. And what comes next isn't remorse, it's damage control. In those cases, even the most obvious signs of guilt aren't guilt at all. They're strategy, a way to blend in, to shift suspicion, to look like the one who tried to help, not the one who pulled the trigger. It's a tactic that's worked before, and in 2021, someone tried it again in a quiet farming town in Iowa, where a man named Ryan Cooper was shot to death in his own living room. At first glance, the crime scene looked simple, but what followed was a 3-year investigation that revealed something far more disturbing. Not a crime of passion, not a robbery gone wrong, but a cold, calculated plot hidden in plain sight. Join me now as we unravel the murder of Ryan Cooper, a husband and father of four, found dead in his favorite chair. We'll follow the twists of a case that began as straightforward, but revealed layers of deception that stunned even veteran investigators, showing how modern technology exposes secrets someone thought were deleted forever. Aaron Cooper's phone rang at 4:30 a.m. on June 18, 2021. He'd been asleep in his farmhouse in rural Traer, Iowa, a quiet town where nothing much ever happens. The voice on the other end was panicked and hysterical. It was 44-year-old Corina Cooper, his sister-in-law, and the wife of his brother, 42-year-old Ryan Cooper.
Hysterical. Words you couldn't really come up with. It's mainly just screaming that somebody was inside their home. At first, didn't know if it was real just because woke up out of sleep for it. I didn't know what to think. I grabbed a pistol that I had and went over there.
As a volunteer firefighter and first responder, Aaron was no stranger to emergencies. But this wasn't just another call. This was family. Corina and Ryan lived with their three children in a separate house on the same farmland, about a mile from Aaron's place. By the time he pulled out of his driveway, he was already on the phone with 911, telling the operator that Corina believed an intruder was inside her home. And he was pretty sure. She said Ryan had been shot. What Aaron didn't know was that Corina was already calling 911, and during her call, she confirmed it. Ryan had been shot twice. Just a minute later, Aaron arrived at the home, and he had no idea what he was walking into.
I saw Kate in the window. My threat level went somewhat down. If there was somebody in their house that was not supposed to be there, I wouldn't figure he would be out and about.
12-year-old Cade, Corina and Ryan's oldest son, was standing at the window when Aaron got to the door. And when he stepped inside, the first thing he heard was the sound of Corina screaming in the living room.
Went in the house and Corina was laying across Ryan on his recliner, kind of like he would be hugging almost. I remember grabbing his leg, and it, at that point, did not feel warm. It wasn't cold, but didn't feel warm. And I checked for a pulse and got no pulse. I noticed the blood coming out of his nose and ears on the floor. At that point, it looked like it was darkening. It wasn't bright red, but it wasn't immediately fresh. I couldn't tell what was wrong. Didn't see an obvious injury.
But it was obvious. Ryan Cooper was already dead. Deputy Kyle Fangman arrived at the Cooper farmhouse at 4:42 a.m., just minutes after Aaron.
When I walked up, there was a male that met me at the end of the kitchen. He informed me his brother was dead. As I entered the kitchen, I could hear a female screaming from the other end of the house, and then we walked through the rest of the house to where Ryan was. He's sitting upright in a recliner, and she was laying on top of him in the chair. She was just kind of laying against him. She was sitting on his lap. She had her face, like, against his chest, and she's just kind of, like, curled up there, I guess.
The scene was gut-wrenching. A woman draped over her dead husband, refusing to let go. The three children were huddled together in the back bedroom, stunned and silent.
She was laying on top of Ryan. When she got up off him, I could see that she was covered in blood. I tried asking her what was going on. She was just screaming that she needed an ambulance. He appeared to be deceased. All she said was she was just wondering where the ambulance was and they needed help.
Corina was inconsolable, so much so that Deputy Fangman asked Aaron to take her outside.
So after Aaron took Corina outside, he came back in and he had told me he had gotten a series of calls from Corina just a few minutes before I was dispatched that there was someone in the house, that Ryan had been shot, but he said it was mostly just screaming as well. I began looking at Ryan, trying to determine if it was something medical related, if it could have been gunshots, basically trying to determine what actually happened. I saw injuries to the left side of his face, in front of his ear, on like the cheekbone. There's an indentation, and then in front of that, there was two small holes, and then there's blood.
Deputy Fangman determined Ryan had been shot twice in the face, likely from a small caliber weapon. Then he began surveying the scene.
There's a large pool of blood on the, it'd be his left side of the recliner. There's blood all over the front of his shirt, coming out of his nose, his ears. In the large pool to the left of the chair, I noticed that there was swipes taken out of it, like someone could have stepped in it or slid in it. And then it appeared that it was coagulating, clotting. On the east wall of the living room, there's blood splatter on that wall, on the door, and then the wall behind the recliner, there was blood splatter as well.
By 4:46 a.m., Deputy Travis Foster had arrived on the scene and found Karina outside, shaken, disoriented, and still hysterical.
Initially, it was very hard, too, because of how hysterical she was. But she did eventually provide information. After escorting her to my patrol vehicle, I asked her what happened, and she said that she had initially heard a noise, a loud noise in the house, and that's what had woke her up. So she exited her bedroom and went through the living room and peeked into the kitchen and didn't see anything. She then returned back to the living room and thought she heard a noise or a snore or something like that. So she turned on the light and observed Ryan deceased in the recliner. And she stated that after she initially saw Ryan, she had noticed that her other son had awakened. So she took her son and brought him into the bedroom where her other kids were and attempted to get her gun out of her safe but was unable to.
Deputy Foster then asked Karina to describe the sound that had woken her up. She said it sounded like a crash. But could it have been a gunshot?
And initially she said she didn't know. And then after briefly speaking with Deputy Fangman, I asked her that again. And she said she didn't know. She had never heard a gunshot before, except maybe on TV. And then I inquired about her owning a gun. And she stated that she had never shot the gun that she had tried to retrieve from the safe.
Inside the home, investigators searched for answers. There was no sign of a forced entry, no broken locks, no shattered windows, and nothing appeared to be stolen. But something was missing. In the living room, where Ryan had been shot, crime scene technicians recovered a single shell casing from a .22 caliber rifle. But Ryan had been shot twice, so where was the second casing? Hey everyone, if you're into gripping investigative true crime, then I've got a show for you. It's the new season of La Monstra from Tenderfoot TV and iHeart Podcasts. 30 years ago, in the city of Mons in Belgium, five women vanished. Their disappearances weren't linked until gruesome discoveries were made across the city. 15 trash bags containing body parts were found at strategic dump sites seemingly designed to taunt authorities and terrify the public. The identity of this sadistic serial killer remains unknown, but his name still sparks fear. The Butcher of Mons. Even with the help from the FBI, the case was never solved. But now, three decades later, the podcast investigation has uncovered new evidence, new witnesses, and new suspects. Listen to La Monstra, Season 2, The Butcher of Mons, available now, wherever you get your podcasts. Ryan Cooper was born and raised in Tama County. Cooper Farms LLC was a family-run operation, passed down through generations, and Ryan had spent most of his life working it alongside his brother Aaron.
Farm, crop, and cattle. Born and raised, we shared pretty much all the roles together for the most part, from planting to harvest and working cattle, hauling grain. We have a feedlot that we raise cattle at, and we haul a majority of our own cattle to market.
In many ways, Ryan had been the quintessential Iowa farmer. He loved hunting, drinking Bush Light, and watching college football. He joined the family business straight out of high school and took an immense pride in his job. Hardworking and steady, he was deeply rooted in the land, but he also had a love for fast machines. In his free time, Ryan customized trucks, snowmobiles, and boats, never staying in one hobby for long. And the only thing Ryan loved more than farming or horsepower was his family.
I met Ryan in the summer of 2006. Got married September of 2009. We have four children total. One is Ryan from his first marriage, and we have three between the two of us.
Karina Cooper describes her marriage with Ryan and how for years she earned a living by running a barbershop out of an outbuilding on the farm property. By the time Ryan was shot in 2021, they'd been together for 15 years.
Generally speaking, I would call it good, normal. both Ryan and I kind of went through phases where one year we'd say, oh, we want to go camping. And we did camping for quite a while. We bought a couple of different campers. Then he would go through a motorcycle phase, and he bought and rebuilt a motorcycle. And then we were golfing the next year. And so we recycled a lot of toys and a lot of hobbies.
But whatever phase Ryan was in, the farm always came first.
If they weren't in the field, he was trucking or working cattle. So some days could start as early as 4 a.m. If he started that early, he was usually done a little earlier, around 2, 3. Some days it was from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. It varied depending on what he was doing.
Over the years, Ryan's demanding schedule had created some unusual sleeping habits.
Well, 99% of the time he slept in the recliner in the living room. When he slept hard and snored hard, but he was up and down quite a bit throughout the night. He would sleep for a few hours, then wake up and watch some TV, and then sleep again.
The children had their own sleeping patterns as well.
The two younger ones, Cable and Cortland, were usually in bed with me. We had trouble getting any of the kids to sleep in their rooms, and Cade would sleep on the couch downstairs. We were doing some remodeling to the house, and that involved repainting everything before the carpet came. And I told the kids that throughout that summer, we would repaint and decorate their rooms however they wanted to, with the incentive to get them sleeping back in their rooms before school started.
For many months, Cade had been sleeping on the couch next to his father, scared to sleep alone. But investigators learned that just days before his father's murder, Karina insisted it was time to go to sleep back upstairs. Several hours after Ryan's body was discovered, Iowa DCI Special Agent Ryan Herman sat down for a formal interview with Karina Cooper. He'd been briefed on a suspicious death and told Karina was the victim's wife, but beyond that, he didn't know much.
The conversation started. We spoke briefly about her children, the marriage, the fact that Ryan and her had been together for approximately 15 years. I got a lot of background information for Ryan essentially being a farmer, and she ran a hair salon out of an outbuilding on their property. One of the questions I had right away was, why is Ryan sleeping on the recliner? What's the situation with that? So we spoke in depth about how he has a snoring problem and he sleeps on the recliner and has for an extended amount of time.
From there, Agent Herman shifted to the night of the murder, asking Karina to walk him through what had happened.
She ran through kind of the breakdown of the evening. She said that her oldest son had a baseball game. They returned from the baseball game and kind of did their baseball game kind of ritual of everybody taking showers, everybody having dinner. She said that she was the last one to take a shower, and she thought that she had gotten into bed around 9 or 10 o'clock on that evening. She said that she sits in her bed and reads on a Kindle. She got up to use the bathroom, what she thought was around midnight, maybe 11:30, goes back to bed and falls asleep.
At that point, Karina said she could still hear the TV on in the living room and Ryan snoring from his recliner.
And then she wakes up again at approximately 3 a.m. She goes, uses the restroom a second time. At 3 o'clock, she remembers that the TV was off, the room was dark, and she heard Ryan snoring at that time as well. She goes right back to bed, lays down, falls asleep, isn't in what she would call a deep sleep, but is awoken by a crashing sound.
I got out of bed, and I stumbled on the dog at the end of the bed, and I walked out of the bedroom. I walked into the bathroom because that's what I thought it was our shower caddy had fallen. It had fallen earlier in the week. I went to the kitchen next and looked out the window that is over the sink, which overlooks basically our driveway and front yard. Then I went and walked into the living room on the other side of the house, in all honesty, to yell at Ryan for not waking up with me, because my thought was, why isn't he up looking? Like, how did he not hear that? Then I walked to the living room and turned on a lamp. I see Ryan, and then I see a large pool of blood. I shook his foot, and then I just started screaming.
After the initial shock of finding her husband dead, Karina said it occurred to her that someone might still be inside the house.
She thought possibly somebody was in the house, something had happened, and She was scared that somebody was in the house. She wasn't sure, so she locks the older boy into the bedroom with the two younger children, and she places a call to Aaron Cooper, who is Ryan's brother.
Aaron lives less than a mile from us. Aaron is a first responder. Aaron is the person closest to us that I would trust in a time of emergency. I called him because I was panicking, and I wanted him there because I thought somebody might still be around.
Karina also said at some point, she climbed onto Ryan in the chair, trying to help, or at least understand what had happened.
She said that she looked on his face and couldn't tell if there was any bumps or bruises, cuts, anything like that. She couldn't understand why he was bleeding so much.
What stood out to H. and Herman, though, was what Karina didn't say. At this point, no one had told him Ryan had been shot. And while Karina had already mentioned gunshot wounds to both Aaron and 911, here, she never said a word about it. She now seemed unsure, or unwilling, to say what actually caused Ryan's death. As the interview continued, Agent Ryan Herman asked Karina a question that often reveals more than people intend.
Has there been any marital issues between the two of you?
No, we had a rough patch shortly after his mom passed away where we weren't getting along. There wasn't any real issue. We were just both sad and mad and not communicating. Nothing where there was ever any doubt about our marriage.
Okay, so no affairs of any kind?
No.
By you? And the only reason I ask is if someone went in and did something to him. And again, we don't know. Could be that, could be medical. We don't know. I'm just thinking about like the scorned lover type of thing or anything like that.
No.
Okay. So there's no concerns about that.
We don't go anywhere. We don't do anything. He might go to the bar after work with his friend Riley, and he's never home past 8. That's how excited we are. There was never.
Never any issues like that?
Never.
Okay.
According to Karina, things had been stable, normal. But what she didn't know was that in another room, a second interview was unfolding. At the same time Karina was being questioned, Ryan's brother Aaron was speaking with investigators. And during a break in the interviews, Agent Herman was handed a name he hadn't heard of before, Houston Danker.
On the break in the interview, I think about an hour into the interview, we take a short break. During that break is when the name Houston Danker is brought to my attention. While Karina is being interviewed, Aaron Cooper is being interviewed at the same time, and Aaron brought up Houston Danker's name and that there was a Snapchat that had been viewed by Ryan on Karina's phone. The information was that she may have had an affair or that there was some sort of romantic relationship or physical relationship between Houston and Karina.
24-year-old Houston Danker was a grain elevator worker from Shellsburg, about 40 minutes from the Cooper farm. Locals knew him for getting involved with older married women. Agent Herman was surprised, and when the interview resumed, he confronted Karina directly about him.
What can you tell me about your relationship with Houston?
Danker?
Yeah.
He's my friend.
Okay. And I'm going to be blunt with you and be forward with you. The only reason we ask is Aaron made mention about maybe Ryan seeing something on your Snapchat. Not that that was Houston, but there was something with your Snapchat.
There was a Snapchat that wasn't even meant for me.
Okay, tell me about
Supposedly, Ryan saw it, not me. And he told me about it. It was something about a married woman and naked, seeing her naked or something like that.
Okay.
And Ryan saw it and confronted me, and I confronted Houston, who were friends on Snapchat, and that's it. And he swore up and down that it wasn't intended for me. And that was the end of it.
Karina explained that Houston was one of her regular customers at her barber shop, and that they'd become good friends, nothing more.
We had sapped each other earlier in the day that day because he got some product from my salon.
Okay.
So he said that he sent it to the wrong person.
So I guess
this is dumb.
We're trying to get to the bottom of dumb.
Oh my god.
I'm just making sure that all the questions are answered. Has Houston seen you naked?
No! God, no! Okay. He's 22 years old!
Oh,
no!
To each their own, I just...
Stupid town and their rumors! No!
Okay.
I cut his hair. I watched his kids a couple times when his babysitter flaked.
Okay.
Oh my god.
And then I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but it's safe to say that nothing is going on between you.
Absolutely not! After that Snapchat, I don't even talk. I don't cut his hair anymore. I told Ryan I would just keep a distance from everybody. From him, from his brother, from anybody related in that age group. To make him feel better. And it's been a non-issue since then.
According to Karina, this Snapchat incident happened the previous fall, about 9 months before Ryan's murder. Eventually, the interview wrapped up, and Karina was free to go. But as Agent Herman watched her leave, some of what he'd learned didn't sit right.
So there's the information that Karina might be seeing someone else, and maybe Ryan knows about it. There could be a conflict between those two that Karina didn't disclose to us at the beginning of the conversation. And that Cade, the oldest boy, was sleeping upstairs. He would sleep on the sofa with his dad and watch TV. The last few evenings, he was going to his room, and that the two younger children were supposed to be back in their rooms, but on that particular night, they were sleeping with Karina in her bedroom.
And then there was what she did after finding Ryan. Lying on top of him, covered in blood, instead of trying to help him. As far as Agent Herman knew at that point, Karina still didn't even know Ryan had been shot. Within hours of Karina's interview, investigators tracked down Houston Danker for questioning, and his story almost lined up with hers perfectly. When asked about the relationship, Houston described himself as, quote, her gay best friend, and denied any romantic involvement.
The hard thing with all that rumor being spread is I was literally sitting there like a gay best friend. I was having, you know, me and my baby mama split up, okay? Mm-hmm. I was getting my hair cut by Karina, and I have two kids. You know,
right.
She loves kids, whatever, and she always told me, you know, if you're ever in a pinch, hey, you know, I don't have a problem watching your kids, whatever. And so we were all, you know, everybody was friends, whatever. You know, well then, you know, she watched my kids a couple times when I was in a pinch. Well then, you know, small towns talk, you know.
Exactly.
Houston's kids are over at Karina's. He's nailing her, you know, yeah. And then, yeah. And I guess that's probably where Ryan probably got upset. You know, I mean...
Because you kind of... keep in mind, I don't know you. I've known you for, 10 minutes now?
Yeah.
But you kind of got a reputation where you're pretty successful with the ladies, right?
Despite the rumors, police had no solid reason to doubt their stories. Small-town gossip had started plenty of fires before. They even examined Karina and Houston's phones, but found nothing out of the ordinary. The crime scene wasn't much better. No weapon, no fingerprints, just one missing .22 caliber shell casing, a few whispers, and a murder that didn't make any sense. In the months that followed, Karina tried to rebuild her life for herself and the boys. She collected Ryan's $500,000 life insurance policy, paid off debts, and eventually moved the family into town. To anyone watching, she appeared to be a grieving widow, doing her best to carry on. And that's the way it stayed for nearly 3 years. But even as the trail grew cold, agents at the Iowa DCI refused to give up.
Yeah, so I was only given that there was a shooting in Tama County on the day of June 18th, 2021, around 4:30 a.m. And they just wanted to know if I could get a better extraction than what they got originally.
The voice you just heard is Tiffany Lord, a digital forensic investigator at the University of Iowa. In early 2024, she was asked to take another look at Karina Cooper's phone. It had only been 3 years since the last extraction, but technology had advanced dramatically.
I was not told anything besides Karina's name, that she was the wife of the deceased. So what I was just looking at is if anything stood out as far as like conversations, movements, any searches prior to a pattern of life, just any sort of conversations.
And this time, the data revealed far more than investigators had seen before.
So there was Google searches, health data, text messages, Snapchat conversations, and then pattern of life.
When Tiffany zeroed in on communications between Karina and Houston Danker, the truth came out immediately.
That there was a sexual relationship between the two of them?
The recovered Snapchat messages showed not only that Karina and Houston were having an affair, but that both had been lying to investigators since day one. In March 2021, just 3 months before the murder, Karina sent Houston a message that was impossible to ignore.
Good morning, baby. You would have woke up to your horny wife's hand wrapped around your this morning, just so you know. Here's hoping for a rogue semi today. Big accident, no survivors.
It was Karina openly wishing Ryan dead, and the messages didn't stop there. She and Houston talked about building a life together. Even about having children.
I read somewhere that even if the surgery doesn't work, you can still do IVF. Might be pregnant this time next year.
Houston responded.
Would love for you to be pregnant this time next year. I would love babies in my slow season so I can be around to help and spend time with you and the baby as much as possible.
On June 17th, just hours before Ryan was killed, the two were exchanging intimate messages.
Going to sleep with my hand on your body very soon. I love how wet you get for me.
Not only did the messages reveal the sexual nature of Karina and Houston's relationship, they also demonstrated that both of them expected Ryan to be out of the picture in the near future. The new data extracted from Karina's phone also revealed previously unknown activity on the very morning of the murder. Karina and Houston messaged at 3:30 a.m., a time when Karina claimed to be sleeping.
Okay, babe, phone's going down. Send me something after I leave your house to then wait for me to open it. Deal? Deal.
That message suggested Houston was already at the Cooper home, or about to be. Seconds later, another message.
Remember those casings. Remember those. No ifs and or buts.
For nearly 3 years, investigators had puzzled over the missing shell casing. Now, Houston himself had brought it up. Karina's reply, absolutely, 100%.
Okay, phone's going down. I love you. Seriously, putting the phone down. Have to get this shit done. I love you.
Her response was short, just one word, go. While Karina told investigators she'd been sleeping until 4:30, her phone told another story.
At 4:13 in the morning, it showed there is a live photo that was watched. And then also that same morning at 4:18, it shows that there was two photos deleted.
Karina's Apple Health app also tracked her movement that morning.
Yeah, it shows here on June 18th, 2021, at 4:23 in the morning, movement started, and then it ended at 4:33.
According to Karina's Apple Health app, she'd taken 170 steps during this 10-minute window.
The 170 steps, if you were to take the meters and turn it into feet, actually turns into 393 feet. And so it's a little bigger than one football field.
In that window, she'd taken 170 steps, far more than the short walk she described. Meanwhile, a forensic search of Houston's phone revealed something even darker.
How to kill somebody with antifreeze. Best way to kill somebody with no way for anybody to find out who did it. Is sodium sulfate, is it deadly? What is the best way to poison somebody quickly? Is chloroform traceable? cyanide, where to find arsenic, what's the best gun to use to kill somebody, how do people get caught for shooting, how to positively get away with murder, the best way to kill somebody with no evidence.
Even after Ryan was killed, Houston's searches continued.
This is 6/18/2021 at 5 p.m. Old open Snapchats be found again after being seen in the state of Iowa. This one's on July 1st, 2021. Where do murderers go to prison? This is July 2nd, 2021. Can the feds pull Snapchats back up? Can data forensics retrieve old Snapchat conversations from an iPhone? Can old opened Snapchats be found again after being seen in the state of Iowa? Does Snapchat save every message and picture I send?
The digital trail left no doubt. Karina and Houston weren't just sneaking around. They were planning a future together, without Ryan. The recovered messages laid out a chilling sequence. Karina wishing for her husband's death, Houston researching how to kill, and both mapping out a life after Ryan was gone. But most incriminating were the messages from the morning of the murder. At 3:30 a.m., Houston telling Karina to remember the casings. Her reply, absolutely, 100%. Moments later, her last word to him, go. After nearly 3 years of lies and cover-ups, investigators finally had what they needed. This wasn't grief. This wasn't rumor. It was murder by design, with a $500,000 insurance payout waiting in the wings. By February 2024, investigators finally had enough to make their move. Karina Cooper was arrested and charged with first-degree murder. Houston was taken into custody 2 months later. Prosecutors were confident in the case against them, but in truth, the evidence was thin, almost entirely circumstantial. Then, in April 2024, they caught a break. Bradley Seek, one of Houston's co-workers, came forward. He told police he'd been storing several guns for Houston, but once he heard Houston was tied to a murder investigation, he wanted no part of it.
He was moving, and his girlfriend, whatever he was moving in with, had a daycare in her house, so I'm assuming he didn't want them there. He just said, can you hold these for me, and that was it. One was an AR-15, one was a double-barrel shotgun, and one was a .22 rifle.
From the beginning, investigators believed the murder weapon was a .22 caliber rifle. Now, they finally had Houston's. It was sent immediately for ballistics comparison.
The microscopic comparisons conducted on the cartridge case from the scene, they were compared to the rifle, and the cartridge case was identified as having been fired in that rifle. It was a Ruger 10-22 rifle.
The ballistics were a perfect match to Houston's gun. If Karina had followed Houston's instructions and gathered the shell casings, this connection would never have been made. But she hadn't. And now, prosecutors had their first piece of hard physical evidence tying Houston's gun directly to Ryan's murder. The murder trial for Karina Cooper began in July 2025. Despite the mountain of evidence against her, Karina pointed the finger squarely at Houston.
Like others have said, it's a small town. I knew of him for years, but I started cutting his hair is how I met him. Flirting a little bit when cutting his hair, talking about he was having a lot of problems with his ex-girlfriend, the mother of his child at the time. He confided in me a lot about that, and I guess it kind of originated with me feeling like not a big sister, but an older person to him that has some experience in marriage and children, and just giving him advice and encouragement. And I felt kind of bad for him. He was young and had children, and other people his age didn't, and we became friendly. And I was being showered with attention by him, being told I was beautiful, and it became very flattering to me.
According to Karina, their friendship began in the summer of 2020 and soon moved to Snapchat.
It was like we were shy in person, but became other people when we were texting each other. Houston acted like he was my husband and Ryan was my boyfriend.
Karina admitted they'd been intimate once that fall, but said guilt stopped her from seeing him again in person. Instead, she claimed, their connection turned into nothing more than an online fantasy.
I want him around and I didn't want that chance of that happening ever again. It was an online fantasy, like going to a chat room or playing video games where you steal cars and shoot at cops. It was an online fantasy thing, and when it became a physical in-person thing, I was disgusted and scared of losing my husband.
According to Karina, Houston often joked about killing Ryan, remarks she insisted she never took seriously.
He had made a comment before about walking into the shop. When Ryan was there, I was gone with the kids at the swimming pool. And he had made a comment. He said, if you get home and find your husband dead, make sure you pick up those shells for me. And I had asked him, what in the world, you know, like, LOL, what does that mean? And he said, well, according to CSI, that's how they always catch the killer. So I took it as a joke.
When it came to the night of the murder, Karina claimed she had no idea Houston was planning to act.
It was 3:30 in the morning. I halfway read messages, didn't always read them thoroughly, I wasn't paying attention, plain and simple.
Because Houston had previously joked about killing Ryan and having Karina pick up the shells, Karina claims the threat didn't alarm her. But if that were the case, why did she send the final message saying, go?
Go to sleep. Three messages, like putting periods in between the words to emphasize go to sleep.
Karina told the jurors the phone extraction had failed to capture the full exchange and that the word go had been taken out of context. She also testified that she believed Houston had slipped into the house without her knowledge and that as soon as she found Ryan dead, she knew Houston was responsible. So why hadn't she told police?
I was scared. I was panicked. I instantly thought I was being set up in one of his plots that he laid out all the time through Snapchat. I panicked. I was also being threatened by Houston for over a year and a half afterwards. He was watching me and reminding me about these dangerous people that he knew and that he knew how to take care of problems and that he would take out anybody else that was necessary. I was scared of Houston. I was scared of the police. I was scared that I had lied for so long because I felt like I was being set up. I felt like no matter what, I was screwed, for lack of a better term. I was scared of the threats that he was making to my kids and my friends. And I felt that if I kept my mouth shut, he'd leave us alone.
Did you participate in the death of your husband?
No.
But no evidence of these alleged threats were ever introduced in court. During closing arguments, prosecutors laid out their version of what they believed happened in the early hours of June 18, 2021. They argued Houston arrived with his .22 caliber rifle while Ryan slept in his recliner, and that Karina played an active role in the murder.
Now, they think they've done a good job of deleting everything. They certainly think they've done a good job of deleting the most incriminating snaps. 2,400 messages recovered on Karina's phone, Snapchats. 61 of them deleted. Those 61 include the night of the murder. We heard a lot of information about Houston Danker and his threats and the fantasy world that Karina was living in, the fun fantasy, as any mother of three would have, happily married, where, you know, you just talk online with your affair partner about murdering your husband. It's a fantasy world. It's just fun. Makes no sense. It's ridiculous. It's not a fantasy. It's real. She knows it's real. 5 months. The 5 months that she was planning this murder.
Jurors also heard from Ryan's oldest, Cade, who testified that just days before the murder, Karina had suddenly insisted he return to sleeping in his own room instead of next to his father in the living room. The prosecution pointed to Karina's behavior that morning as proof she was involved.
Was she involved? Let's just take a look at the scene. One of the things that you learn, that scientists know, that detectives know, that investigators know, it's not like TV. You don't shoot somebody and they just lay gently back in their chair. It is chaotic. It is messy. And as smart as they thought they were, that didn't occur to them. Karina was present when Ryan was shot. She's there. She's absolutely there. Did she pull the trigger or did she not? You don't have to find that she did. She clearly aided and abetted in this crime. The evidence shows she shot Ryan Cooper in the face. How do we know that? She's got a problem. It's going to look pretty suspicious if she takes a shower to clean her hair. She can't do that. So what does she do? What else could possibly explain what she's doing? She jumps on Ryan. She puts her face, forehead, hair into the blood coming from Ryan's face because she's concealing evidence. She's concealing evidence of back spatter that she received when she crouched down and shot Ryan Cooper in the face. Why would you sit on your dead husband who had just been shot and rub your face all over his face, directly over the wounds, soaking your face and hair with his blood? Because you shot him and you're covered in back spatter.
And then there was Karina's own testimony and one small slip that prosecutors pounced on.
Did you catch what she said yesterday during your testimony? Ryan was sleeping when he was shot. Medical examiner never testified to that. Nobody testified that Ryan was sleeping when he was shot. There's no testimony to that at all. Ryan was sleeping when he was shot? Karina says, yes. How does she know that? Wouldn't the answer be, I don't know? She said yes, because she shot him. She's guilty of murder in the first degree, beyond a reasonable doubt.
In the end, it only took the jury 3 hours.
All right, I have a form of verdict. We, the jury, find the defendant, Karina Cooper, guilty of the offense of murder in the first degree, dated this 11th day of July, 2025.
The verdict guaranteed her a mandatory life sentence without the possibility of parole. Just weeks later, Houston Danker avoided trial altogether. He pled guilty to first-degree murder without a deal. His attorney told the press Mr. Danker wanted to accept responsibility for his role. He, too, will spend the rest of his life in prison. Ryan Cooper's death left a devastating void in the lives of those who knew and loved him. After the verdict, his sister Michelle Wilson spoke for the family. It's difficult to say justice has been served. Our niece and nephews will never get their father back. Ryan will not be by our side as our father. Aaron and myself continue our family's farming legacy. The Cooper family farm lost not just a skilled farmer, but a devoted steward of the land. Now, Ryan's brother Aaron works those fields alone, planting, harvesting, hauling grain on the same ground the two once worked side by side. But it's Ryan's children who bear the heaviest weight. 4 young lives, forever changed by a senseless act of betrayal. In his obituary, friends remembered Ryan as someone who was great with all children, and it was clear to everyone how much he adored his kids. That love, genuine, steadfast, and unconditional, stands in sharp contrast to the deception that ended his life. The Iowa farmland Ryan loved continues its endless cycle of planting and harvest. But for one farming family in Traer, the fields will never look quite the same again. Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to ad-free episodes, extra content, and Patreon-exclusive episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. To find us on Instagram and Facebook, search The Minds of Madness, and on Twitter using the handle @madnesspod. And also, by checking out our sponsors and using our promo codes, you're also helping support the show. We've got all the links in our episode notes. So until next week, thanks for listening.